Where do you see your career in 10 years? What are you doing now to help you get there? The sooner you start enhancing your skills, the sooner you'll be ready. That's why AARP has reskilling courses in a variety of categories like marketing and management to help your income live as long as you do.
That's right. AARP has a bevy of free skill building courses for you to choose from because the steps that you choose to take today will help you to love what you do in the future. And that's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/skills.
Let's be honest. The first place our family turns to when we're looking for a quick getaway is always Airbnb. I know we can find an amazing place to stay at the beach, like St. Simon's on the Georgia coast, for instance. Mm-hmm. It's one of our favorite spots. That's what comes to mind, Matt, when I'm thinking about travel. And while you're staying at someone else's home, have you ever thought about what you could be doing with your own home?
That's right. Your empty space could be an Airbnb while you are away, because that is all you need to become an Airbnb host. It's a lot easier than you think, and you don't need to Airbnb your entire house. You could just host your extra spare room if you've got one. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're really choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers.
Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies.
Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com. Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're talking food stamps to financial freedom with Yanely Espinal.
That's right. Our guest today has journeyed from food stamps to financial freedom, and we're going to hear all about how she was able to accomplish that. We are joined today by Yanely, who is also known as Miss Be Helpful. She is the first generation daughter of immigrants. She was born in Brooklyn, and it didn't take her long to rack up $20,000 in credit card debt before she realized that this was not the life that she wanted to lead. She started her career as a teacher and then parlayed that into serving as the director of educational outreach at Next Gen Personal Finance. And now she's recently published her first book, Mind Your Money. And she's currently actually on a political roller coaster ride across the country where she's convincing lawmakers to make personal finance a high school graduation requirement. We are excited to talk about all of that and more today. Yanely, thank you for joining us on the podcast.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. What's up, guys? I'm so excited for this conversation. I really am.
Oh, we're stoked too. We're stoked. We saw you speak in person last year at FinCon, which is the nerdy conference that money,
yes,
ridiculous people who are interested in money to a ridiculous
degree. It's where money and media meet.
That's right.
Joel.
That's right. And Yanely rocked it. She was, I think, probably the best speaker of the evening for sure.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank
so we're
you
like,
so much.
Now, when you had the book come out, we were like, okay, well, it's time to get Yanely on the show.
Yes.
How have we not done this yet?
No brainer.
Right.
Oh, love that.
But
I
the first question we ask everyone who comes on the show, Yanely, is what do you like to splurge on? Matt and I, we drink a lot of craft beer.
Yeah. Some,
not a lot, just the right amount
in
of
moderation.
Nice craft beer.
In moderation.
Yeah. No, not too much. Absolutely.
But we drink expensive beers. It's something
yes,
we like
yeah.
to spend more than the average person on. It's something that we like to prioritize in the here and now, even while we're trying to be smart, wise with our money, save and invest for the future. But what is that for you?
Right. For me, I would say it's definitely getting deep tissue, full body massages.
Oh.
I am like, I don't know. It's so weird because like I'm not like, you know, Naomi Osaka or anything. Like I'm not going and having like a personalized like masseuse in my home all day, every day. But I work a lot. I'm at my computer a lot. I exercise a lot. And I feel like because I'm so passionate, so animated, and like I use my hands to talk and I hold tension like in my body, in my face, in my neck, my arms. So after like a really intense week, I just feel the pressure, like the tension, like in my body. And there's nothing like a full body deep tissue massage, like really getting the knots out of my back, super relaxing, just letting go of everything. It's almost meditative too, because my mind's like not really thinking about anything and just enjoying, you know, this moment of relaxation. And so for an hour every month, at least, I try and go, if not more than once a month, depending on how hectic the month is. But I'll sometimes spend, you know, upwards of $250 if it's like at a fancy resort or spa or something. And if I'm traveling, to really, you know, get a nice high quality deep tissue massage.
Well, that is, yeah, that sounds awesome. I'm in for that. So you said like, yeah, once a month or so, which is not cheap. I will say too, that is the only time I'm able to shut my mind off is like a massage, and I don't do it enough. And so like—
See, when I do it, I shut my mind, I fall asleep.
Yeah, yeah.
See, no, I get close to that. I don't like people that do. A lot of people do fall asleep.
Oh,
for me,
gosh.
I just, 100%. I don't know, man, I enjoy it. I'm rested, but I'm definitely awake and enjoying it.
So yeah, you get them more often. Like for me, it's like once every— like 2 or 3 years tops.
Oh, but my gosh, no, that would be torture.
I'm trying to prioritize too. I'm trying to do it more.
Joel's into the massages.
Just getting back into
more than I am. But well, okay, thank you for sharing that, Yanelli. And by the way, yeah, $250. I mean, that's
a lot.
So that's a lot of money.
That's a lot. Like, and that's really only when I'm like at a fancy resort,
okay,
or like,
gotcha,
you know, if I'm out traveling or something, and I'm at a hotel that pretty much has like the only place you get a massage is gonna be that price. But for the most part, when I go to like my local massage place, it'll be like $120.
Yeah. Okay. Do they give you the card where you get like 10 of them and they like punch in, that kind of thing?
Honestly, the number of free massages I've got, and I kind of feel bad. I'm
there
like, punch
go.
My card again. Yes. I'm
That's
back.
What I'm talking about. Oh, I love it. You're a frequent flyer.
You're like us. You want to be frugal while you're spending your money.
Exactly. That's right.
Yeah. Just because it's a splurge doesn't mean you shouldn't be kind of smart about it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, hey, let's still find a way to save some money here. But Yanelli, let's kind of talk about your money history and just kind of like your personal history a little bit.
Yeah.
You start your book talking about an interaction, maybe an altercation that you had with your sister. You were along with her. But what happened and what did you learn about money from sort of getting this head smack?
Yeah, so I definitely got smacked by my sister. I describe it in the book as like she knocked on the top of my head like she would knock on a door. And my sister often did that. So I kind of grew up in an environment where it's, you know, tough love. Like, and not that it was like extremely abusive or physically violent, but oftentimes you get smacked around or like, you know, knuckles on the head. And so in this case, I was in the backyard. I was just sweeping, doing my chores. And my sister yelled out to me in the backyard asking me where my mom had went. And I, you know, oftentimes mom would go in and out of the house. My mom was always, you know, at appointments at church or, you know, parent-teacher conferences or whatever kind of related to kids or her own hobbies. But I honestly couldn't remember like where mom went. And so I was thinking like, did she go to the doctor? Did she go to the post office? Like, I don't remember. And then it hit me that she told me she was going to an appointment at the welfare office, which she called fetch au fait. And in my book, I specifically mentioned that term because I didn't know what it was. But later on, as an adult, I saw on paper that she had a face-to-face appointment in order to renew her food stamps. And I put two and two together. And I was like, oh, she had been trying to pronounce face-to-face, but she's saying it with her thick Dominican accent, fetch au fait. But I put two and two together that she was going to an appointment at the welfare office. So I yelled that out at the top of my lungs in the backyard. And my sister was so upset at me that I would yell and tell everyone on our block the, you know, our personal business and to, you know, put mom's business on blast like that. And so she was really mad at me. And while I didn't understand exactly why, you know, she was so upset, I knew that it had something to do with money. And the clear message that I got from my sister, you know, during that incident was that like, we don't talk about money. We don't tell people what we have, what we don't have. We don't tell our personal business like that. And talking about money is more taboo and it's a private thing. So, you know, from a very young age, I think I was probably 8 or 9 years old when that happened. And I remember kind of being shushed and silenced around money.
Yeah, I feel like that is maybe not exactly the way it played out for you, but that's kind of a lesson that a lot of us learn in childhood, right? Is that money is the taboo. It's not to be talked about. It's like, I was telling Matt the other day, my oldest daughter, she said, Dad, how much money do we have? Like for real, overall. And you want to entertain those questions and have a discussion about, you don't want, but a lot of parents want to shut that down, right? And so, what's your take on, I guess, having money conversations, especially with kids? I don't think you have any of your own yet, but why is it so important to open up the conversation around money inside of a home?
Yeah. So actually, in that same section of the book, I talk about the reason why it's so important to talk about this at an early age. There was actually a study conducted with college students, and it showed that parents who avoided talking about money predicted the worst type of problematic credit card usage among those college students. Hmm. So they really, they looked at the experiment, and they kind of broke down the students into groups of the parents who talked about money in a positive way, the parents who talked about money in a negative way, and the parents who avoided money talk, like just never talked about money at all. And you would think that the parents who talked about money negatively would be the ones to pass down problematic, you know, money behaviors to their children. But that was not the case. They were not nearly as bad as the problematic behaviors demonstrated by the students whose parents never talked about money at all. So for me, like, and you're right, I don't have children of my own, but I'm the world's best auntie. I have 10 nieces and nephews. And, you know, I've helped them open Roth IRAs, custodial Roth IRAs. I fund their 529 plans for their birthdays every year. I mean, I'm very involved in sharing with them openly and talking with them about what I'm doing, why I'm doing it. And I think that as early as kids start to ask you for money or talk about money to you, that's the perfect opportunity. At that age to start talking to them about the value of money, how hard it is to earn money, and what different things you can do with money. Because most, you know, kids think, oh, you have money, you can spend it. They don't realize, you know, you can spend, you can save, you can gift, you can invest. There's lots of different things that you can do with money. And those lessons can be imparted on kids as young as 3, 4, 5 years old.
Absolutely. Yeah. And if you don't talk about it, you carry that stigma with you into your own adulthood. But aside from children, I mean, I think there's a lot of folks out there and they are not talking about money. How would you recommend for folks just to make this a part of not only their life and something that they're interested in, but to kind of get the ball rolling and talking about it with their friends?
Yeah, I think with friends and family, depending on the relationship that you have, the specific relationship that you have, every relationship is different, whether that's a friendship or, you know, a courtship, a romantic relationship, or, you know, a mother-daughter relationship. Every relationship is very, it's distinct and individual. So I would say, think about the relationship that you're in, that you're involved in, and kind of match that vibe and that aura, because it's really weird if you have a relationship that, you know, hasn't ever really trespassed those, you know, thresholds of talking about things that are a little, you know, personal or considered to be a little taboo, then all of a sudden you just jump in one day at lunch like, all right, so let's talk about money. You know, how much do you have in your 401k? What are your goals for retirement?
Right.
That it just seems so bizarre and out of place. It's not going to be well received. So I always tell people, lead with a story and lead from the heart. So a heartfelt story, I think, is the key to transitioning into any conversation point around money that, again, it, regardless of the nature of your relationship, a story can help with that. So in my case, talking to my parents about retirement was tricky, because they both, you know, were not prepared for retirement. They still aren't, even though they're in retirement, and their children, luckily they have 9 children, so our big family has been able to pool together money to help them out. But having this conversation initially with them a few years before my dad retired was really tough, because they're going to be defensive. They're going to feel hurt that we're talking about something that they clearly are underprepared for. And, you know, we don't want them to feel like we're blaming them or we're judging them, or that, you know, this is their fault, or that we're ashamed or disappointed. So what we did was, I personally just told my siblings, let's just tell them a story about a friend who has gone through a similar experience where their parents, and fortunately for me, I had a friend who was literally dealing with a similar situation. Where
so you didn't have to lie and tell a story.
I didn't have to like make up a false story. But
let me tell you this parable, Mom and Dad.
It wasn't a folk tale, I promise.
It was
a real friend. And that's why listening to podcasts like this is so helpful, because you're constantly listening to people's stories and listening to experiences from people that they're sharing on podcasts like this. So you feel free to use me. But I tell people all the time, just say a story. Listen, I was listening to a podcast. I heard this girl, Yanali, she was talking about her family and how her parents were not prepared for retirement, but they never really talked about it. And so when it was time for her parents to retire, the parents were assuming that the children were going to be funding their retirement every month and paying for everything. But the children didn't realize that was the expectation, so they weren't prepared financially to do that. And so there was this big clash, and people weren't really on the same page in their family. And as you could imagine, that would lead to fighting, and that could lead to a lot of, you know, miscommunication and all kinds of things. So instead, it would have been smarter for them to talk about it way beforehand. So I'm thinking about how that might apply to our relationship, our family, our friendship, and how great it would be for us to start talking about these things now. Maybe look up a couple of questions that we could start with. And that way we prevent ourselves from repeating the types of mistakes that, you know, people like Yanali have made, because they just didn't talk about it before with enough time.
That's so much less threatening, right? That's such a great way to begin it, as opposed to like, where are you at? Like, what's going on with your money? And exactly. And it really opens up, I think, it gives somebody the ability, the room to have a conversation as opposed to feeling like they have to defend their position or give a full-throated answer to exactly where they stand with their personal finances.
Because their nine kids are staging an intervention.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
We definitely did do that. We definitely staged it. But the thing is, too, is that like everybody's going to agree. Everyone's going to agree that, yes, in that story, I should have started sooner. The family should have talked about this sooner. The expectations should have been made clear sooner. So it's really difficult for somebody to hear that and say, no, I don't want to talk to you about my money. Like, it's so visceral. It's so real that it's true. Most people don't. And when you come up with a story, when you start off the bat with a story like that, you automatically all start off on the same page of, yeah, we definitely want to prevent, you know, we don't want to repeat that. We don't want to do that. So let's be smarter. Let's start talking more, you know, ahead of time. And that's just an easy way to all get on the same page.
Okay. So speaking of stories, let's go back to your story a little bit. You are no dummy. You went to, again, one of the finest institutions in higher education. You went to Brown University.
I did.
Yeah, so you're a smarty pants. And for folks out there who might wonder how someone so smart could get into financial trouble, tell us about that. Sometimes people think IQ equals good money habits. But no, there's a massive disconnect there, right?
Yeah, there definitely is a disconnect because, I mean, I remember just really loving learning. I got so lucky in elementary school and I had a core group of teachers who just made me love reading. They made me love learning through reading. And once I got past that point of, you know, feeling like reading was a chore and not wanting to read, like I couldn't stop. I would be hiding under the covers with a flashlight reading my little Babysitter's Club books and my mom would catch me and be like, you have to go to sleep. Give me the book. Like, so for me, loving learning started really, really early. But one of the things I noticed is that I was only able to demonstrate that passion for learning in the academic courses that I had. I mean, going to school formally, you have these specific classes on your roster and your schedule every year. And that's, you know, that was my time to shine. That was my opportunity to, you know, show my passion for learning and to perform, right? And excel academically. So because I took classes in, you know, science and social studies, English language arts, I took French, I took Spanish, I took art history, I took so many classes, but I never once got a class about money management.
Mm-hmm.
I never once got a class about personal finance. And so I felt when I got to college, I felt this pressure to fit in with all of these wealthier students that were around me that, you know, I really clearly was in a totally different lane from them. You know, my parents did not have the money to support me, to give me an allowance every week or to, you know, support me in any kind of way financially. So I was working multiple jobs and, you know, to pay for my textbooks and my school supplies and buy my own laptop. And I just couldn't come up with the money quickly enough, no matter how many hours I worked, like working a minimum wage job at a pizzeria on campus. It wasn't, you know, it was impossible for me to come up with $1,800 within a week or two of the start of the semester. So I just went down campus one day on my way to work and, you know, saw somebody with a clipboard offering me to, you know, get a free t-shirt if I signed up for the credit card. And of course, it was a student credit card. So it was specific for students to help you pay for your textbooks and your laptop. And it was the perfect pitch because I literally was going through trouble trying to figure out how I was going to come up with money to pay for all these things. So to me, it just was like, like the clouds were parting.
Problem
and
solved.
Here was this woman with this clipboard. It was a magical clipboard. And all I had to do was fill out this paper and then boom, I was going to be able to solve my problems. And so I filled out the application. I got my free t-shirt. I went on my way. And 2 weeks later, I had a shiny plastic credit card in my campus mailbox with my name on it. And I immediately maxed it out. I bought my laptop. I bought some textbooks. and I felt so good. Like, I felt so proud of myself doing that because I didn't have to bother anyone. I didn't have to call my sisters and brothers and ask them for money. I didn't have to bother mom and dad knowing that they didn't have it and that I was only going to be adding to their burden. Because even if they said, I don't have the money right now, I knew that my dad wouldn't stop thinking about it. And he'd probably have to work extra and work harder and try to come up with money to give me because he wouldn't stop thinking about the fact that I needed money. So I didn't want to add any stress to my parents' already existing burden. So I got the credit card. I started using it first for things that I needed. And pretty quickly, I realized just how easy it is for you to swipe that credit card and just buy whatever you want. So that's what I started doing. I just went to the mall and Providence Place Mall, got all my money, Forever 21, H&M. You know, I would go and shopping and buy clothes and shoes. And Also, it's I would say, to the impact of growing up in poverty. Like, every time I asked my mom for things or my dad for things, they would always tell me, no, no hay dinero. You know, there's no money for that. We don't have the money for you to get Jordans. We don't have the money for Nikes or for, you know, a name brand book bag or a name brand coat. So I was constantly being told no, that I couldn't get these things. So in college, having a credit card and feeling more pressure than ever to look a certain way and, you know, and wear certain brands, there was nobody there to tell me no. So I racked up $20,000 of credit card debt by the time I graduated. About a year after my college graduation is when I finally sat down and added up all of my credit card debt that I had and one small student loan for a study abroad program. And it was just under $21,000. And that's when I kind of realized that I had it gotten out of control. I took it too far. And I had a real problem that I needed to figure out some way, somehow, to solve it.
I've heard you speak about this before, too, and just how when you received that credit card, it felt like you were an official adult, right?
Yes.
And it's just interesting to kind of contrast that to the lack of formality that comes with actual financial education. And granted, this is back before laws were changed and credit card companies were actually allowed to be on campus.
That's right.
But it's interesting how there truly is, and this is maybe an argument for some of this official sanctioned financial education that you're pushing for in schools that we'll talk about a little bit later on. But it's interesting how, on one hand, you had this formality, this card, sometimes they make them out of metal now to make it feel like you're even more important.
This passport into adulthood.
That's true.
In contrast to the fact that there was nothing on the syllabus. There was no sort of class that was outlined when
you're
it
just
came
thrown to the wolves.
To financial education. But so, yeah, so you had $20,000, a little over that, actually. But what was it? Because I think there's a lot of folks out there who can continue down that path, and they're not going to really change their behavior until they somehow see the light, until they are able to decide that, oh my gosh, like, what am I doing with my life?
Yeah.
What caused that change in your life?
Like, what was the epiphany?
Yeah, what was that point in time that caused you to want to completely upend how things were going?
Yeah, so I mean, it was... There was a book that I read, which was Suzy Orman's Women and Money. And before reading that book, I was sitting at my desk, running up the numbers, like putting everything into a spreadsheet, adding everything up, because I had gotten to the point where I felt like an adult. I felt like I was winning at this hashtag adulting thing. You know, I was doing everything to help my parents. Every now and then I would send them money to help them pay a bill. You know, I had my own apartment, or I lived with a roommate, so I shared an apartment with a roommate. I had my full-time job as a teacher, which my parents were so proud of me for becoming a professional. In their minds, there was really no difference between a doctor, a lawyer, and a teacher. Growing up in their country, in their native country, in Dominican Republic, when a person becomes, especially a woman, becomes a professional, a working professional, that is the, you know, utmost level of respect for you in terms of a career path, just becoming a professional. And so growing up, I would always hear them say, conviértete en profesional, you know, become a professional, make us proud. So a teacher to them was just as much as me saying I'm a doctor, I'm a lawyer. It didn't make a difference. And I wish I had understood the difference between the salary of a teacher and a lawyer and a doctor, because I may have, you know, thought a little bit more about what I, you know, what my kind of career field was right after college. But, you know, the moment came to me looking at my bills, and I just started crying, because I was like, okay, after I give mommy some money that she told me she needs, plus I paid my rent, I paid off this minimums on my credit cards for this month, I paid my bills in my apartment, I bought a train pass, I bought some groceries, I pay my cell phone bill. Like, I literally have no money left. And it just doesn't make sense, right? Like they say on TikTok, the math ain't mathin'. And I got so frustrated that I was like, how is it possible that I went and got my bachelor's degree, my master's degree, went to one of the most prestigious schools. I got all these opportunities that my parents never got. And I'm still in this paycheck to paycheck cycle, just like my parents. It just didn't make sense. Mm-hmm. So I was just crying. And so I started pulling up everything and just trying to do the basic math. Like, I'm running, putting everything into a spreadsheet. You know, how much actually do I owe? Why is it that I can't afford to pay for things? And that's when I saw my PDF credit card statement, which I had been opening that PDF every month and literally never scrolling past the first page. I would just look at the balance, the minimum due and the due date. That's it. I didn't even look at anything past that. So I decided, okay, let me scroll past the first page. And, you know, that was actually pretty enlightening. I saw a whole bunch of interest fees.
What's this interest line?
Yeah. I was like, what is this? The total amount charged in interest for the year was in a little box all the way at the bottom on the last page of my statement. And that was a shock to me. It was thousands of dollars. I was like, wait, what the heck is going on? How is it possible that when I added up all the interest on my four different credit cards, it was thousands of dollars that I had given? I'm thinking that could have been in my savings account. I could have been giving that to mommy and papi. I could have been using that to do all whole kinds of stuff. It could have been here in my bank account right now to help me pay for stuff. So I just realized that interest fees were accruing very quickly, and I knew I didn't understand this, you know, thing called interest. So actually, in that moment, Ken, I'm not even going to lie, I didn't know what to do. I was just so overwhelmed and frustrated. So I went to bed, and like maybe 2 days later after that experience, I was in a pharmacy. I was buying stuff at the Duane Reade, and, you know, stuff that I would always buy after work, like wasting my money. I was buying candles and lotion, trinkets, whatever little stuff I would pick up on my way home from work. And on the magazine rack, there was a book called Women and Money. And I was like, you know, I'm a woman, and I literally was yesterday just crying about money. Maybe this is one of those moments where the clouds are parting.
God?
And,
oh. Yeah.
So I just picked up the book and I started reading the first few pages while I was in line. And by the time I got to the front to pay, I just put the candles and lotions aside. I was like, I don't want that stuff.
Nice.
I want this book. And it was $9. And I tell people every chance I get, I'm like, that was the best $9 that I ever spent, because that book opened my eyes to basics around money and just to change your relationship with money and the way you think about money, the way you treat money, physically lining up your bills and straightening them out in your wallet, making, you know, taking pride in the money that you've earned. Things that I never got, you know, thought it was never exposed to. And so I followed the debt repayment plan in that book and was able to pay off the debt in 18 months.
Oh, man. I love it. That's so cool. Okay. We talked a little bit about the math. We also, there's more to just getting your money right than just math, though. There's a lot of like mindset work that needs to take place.
Yes.
And that doesn't necessarily take place overnight. We have some questions about that and more that we'll get to with you, Nelly, right after this.
Joel, so we were just recounting our trip to Scotland. This is the trip that we took this time last year, actually, with some of our friends over the weekend. And one of the highlights from Edinburgh was stumbling upon the absolute best meat pie shop.
Mm-hmm.
They were fresh out of the oven. They had that perfectly flaky crust. But guess what? That serendipitous experience would never have happened if we'd stayed at a boring hotel. We had found the perfect flat in the coolest part of town, thanks to Airbnb.
Ah, oh, Matt, I'm still dreaming about those meat pies. You're making me drool. And while turning to Airbnb might be a no-brainer when you're looking to spend some money on travel, it might not be the first thing you think of when you're looking to make some money. Why let it sit empty, your house, when it could be earning extra income, though? It's the financially smart thing to do. Hosting can easily fit into your lifestyle and is a great way to earn some extra dough.
Yeah, that's right. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. You probably think it's too soon to join AARP, right? Well, let's take a minute to talk about it. Where do you see yourself in 15 years? More specifically, your career, your health, your social life? What are you doing now to help you to get there? Well, there are tons of ways for you to start preparing today for your future with AARP.
What about that dream job you've dreamt about? Sign up for AARP reskilling courses to help make it a reality. How about that active lifestyle you've only spoken about from the couch? AARP has health tips and wellness tools to keep you moving for years to come. But none of these experiences are without making friends along the way. Connect with your community through AARP volunteer events.
So, it's safe to say, it's never too soon to join AARP. They're here to help your money, your health, and happiness live as long as you do. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/wisefriend.
Matt, I love hearing from How to Money listeners who are pumped about a major accomplishment, right? Paying off debt, maxing out a retirement account contribution, or paying cash for a car. Like, those are all killer achievements. Those ecstatic emails, they get me stoked. And maybe a little less flashy, but still a crucial accomplishment, is creating a will. And Trust and Will rocks for that task. The things that people build their futures around are things worth protecting. Making an estate plan now means gaining security of your assets and peace of mind for you and your loved ones.
That's right. And with Trust and Will, you can create and manage a custom estate plan starting at just $199. Go to trustandwill.com/howtomoney for 10% off plus free document shipping. Keep your family prepared and protected by managing your will or trust online. And each will or trust is state specific and customized to your needs.
Secure your assets and protect your loved ones funds with Trust and Will. Get 10% off plus free shipping of your estate plan documents by visiting trustandwill.com/howtomoney. That's 10% off and free shipping at trustandwill.com/howtomoney.
All right, we are back from the break talking with Yanely Espinel. And, you know, let's talk about swimming against the current. Because one line that stuck out to me in your book was when you said that you thought you wanted some Jordans, you thought you wanted Uggs, so that people would think that you had money. Right. You wanted people to perceive you a certain way. This is less about putting together a debt plan, right? Like, this is less about the math. And I would say this is tougher to change. Can you speak to that for a second?
For sure. You know, actually, so the book came out at the end of May of 2023. And around that time, I was listening to a bunch of podcasts. I tuned into your podcast that week, actually. And the episode that you all dropped, it was creepy to me how similar that episode was to my second chapter of my book, where I talk about swimming against the current. I mean, I think it was called Overcoming Your Idiot Brain.
Oh, yeah.
So whoever's listening, if you haven't listened to that episode, go back to May of 2023 and pull that up, because it was so great. Like, the examples, even the language that you guys used was so similar. Like, fighting back. Like, I talk about that in my book. I talk about how every day you get up and you're like a soldier and you have to get ready for battle, because at the moment you wake up and take your first breath, like, you're going to start to see ads on social, ads on Spotify, you know, ad on the bus. When you walk out of your house, you turn on the radio. Oh, another ad. Everybody wants your money. And it's like this constant game of whack-a-mole with a bunch of money hungry moles. And so I put that in my book because I truly feel like that is why your brain is your first priority when it comes to money, before saving and budgeting and understanding your income and your cash flow, before any of that stuff. The brain is number one. And so I talk about swimming against the current in the book, because I feel like for a lot of people, once you learn the math stuff, the math is the easy part, because there's calculators online to automate that math stuff for you. You don't have to be able to understand the compounding formula. You just pull up a compound interest calculator and it does the math for you. Mm-hmm. So the math is really the easy part, but the hard part is the social stuff. Feeling like you're not cool enough if you don't have, you know, the latest gadgets, if you don't have, you know, the nicest apartment, if you don't have the latest sneakers or the latest purse or whatever it is that everybody around you is posting and talking about. If you don't have it, you fall prey to this invisible force around you that's making you feel like you're never cool enough, you're not ever going to be good enough. And in order for you to succeed financially and kind of fight back against a lot of that stuff, you really have to, you know, do your own thing. You have to swim against the current, and you have to kind of decide that it's, even though it feels unnatural for so many of us to try to go against a lot of that, you know, whatever's common and popular, that's the only way that you're actually going to be able to make decisions about what you really want your money to do for you, and not what you've been brainwashed to think that you should do with your money. So, you know, for me, I think that's a huge part. And you know, for me, that's why I dedicated the whole second chapter of the book. It's called Get Your Mind Right, because I really think before you even get into the money stuff, you really got to start understanding these biases that you fall prey to when you're making choices with your money, and what you can do to fight back against those biases.
And you say that community is a big part of that too, right? So who you surround yourself with, because it feels like there are these like flaming arrows aimed at us all the time, trying to get us to part from our money. And if we don't put on that kind of armor to protect ourselves, we're going to fork it over.
Yep.
So how does community and who you like, your friends, your family, who you hang out with, how does that impact your ability to be kind of resilient to those calls, to those advertisers who are trying to part you from that hard-earned money?
No, I love this question, because for me, I'm going to tell you the truth. My family was not really on board with, you know, they saw what I was doing and they said it was a little too drastic, because it's true. I was super frugal. Like, once I realized what was happening with my money, I was not playing games. I was like, I'm so serious. It's just like committing to getting an A+ in my physics class.
Like,
I was like,
mission.
I'm not. Yeah, I was on a mission. Exactly. So, you know, if we would go out, I would only order something like a very small thing in my budget, and everybody would be trying to split the bill. And I'd be like, nope, no splitting bills over here. I'm getting my own separate check.
I'm drinking water. I didn't have the margarita you guys had.
Right. I'm like, unless I'm mistaken, this water with a lemon slice was free. So I'm not. So I just was very, very frugal. And I think they started to see that, and they were maybe like a little judgmental at first. But I knew right away that my family, because after I told them about like the books that I had been reading and the blogs that I was reading and the podcasts I was listening to and these ideas that I had been exposed to, they all just thought like it's a little too too drastic and it's a bit too much. And it got to the point where honestly, some of my siblings were just telling me to shut up. They were like, we don't care about the new maximum on your Roth IRA increasing by $500 this year. We don't care about that stuff. That's your thing. And so then I was like, okay, fine. So I decided I'm going to go online because obviously I'm not going to change my family. I'm not going to cancel my family. Like, I love these people. I just have to accept that they
get on board
not...
or get out of my life. You know, you ain't going to do that.
I would not. I was like, come on, I love these people. But if I can't convince them that this is the most important thing for us, then I'm just going to have to show them and not tell them. So what I did was I kind of just did my own thing. Instead of subtracting people out of my life, I didn't do that. I just added a bunch of people into my mindset, into my life, to my newsfeed. On social media, I started following a bunch of people and starting to follow hashtags and just start to look at all the content and listen to more podcasts and just really immerse myself into the space of personal finance, financial independence, and debt repayment, and, you know, all these debt-free community, all this stuff online, which, you know, for me, helped me to feel like I had another family. I had this other community outside of like the people that I see every day and hug and kiss when I'm, you know, together with them. It doesn't have to be the physical people in your life. It might not be, and that's okay. For me, it wasn't, but I still was able to go online and feel like I knew these people that, you know, were kind of like, you know, influences on me that in terms of my mindset and helping me with resources and things. But I never met really any of them until honestly recently, which is wild for me to say that I've now worked with so many of those creators who were early influences on me. You know, I met Mr. Money Mustache. I met Peter at FinCon. You know, I've met so many incredible speakers. I met Tiffany the Budgetista at a conference for women. And I've just so many of these amazing early influences in my life, I've been able to meet and tell them, thank you so much. Like, you are the reason why I completely changed the trajectory of my life and my future generations' lives, because I started to, you know, get serious about my money. So, you know, just really quickly, if that's not people that you love right now, that you see every day, that you hang out with, your friends, your family, your spouse, your partner, that is okay. Show them. Don't feel like you have to tell them, because they might not be ready to hear it. But when they see it, they can't deny it.
That's some good advice right
Quick
there.
Quick plug for the How to Money Facebook group, because that's truly 10,000 plus people who are helping each other out and really want to get better with their money. And it's this hive mind, but it's also this group where there's so much support that goes alongside of
that.
It.
I got to join. I love that.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we need, right? We need the information combined with the attaboys, attagirls. Like, you can do it. You got this. And I think that that two-pronged approach is just, it's crucial, and it really helps a lot of people succeed. You need that motivation. If there's nobody physically in your life, you need that.
For sure.
That's the beauty of an online community. Yeah,
it's one of the few upsides to social media
as we are learning more and more
about the downside.
Yeah.
You kind of were talking about how you went pretty hard in the frugal direction.
Yeah.
Like, what are some of the more extreme things that you may have done to save money to get ahead? Because I think at some point in the book you mentioned something about eyebrow threading.
Yes, can
you?
I was just thinking about that.
Can you talk some about that? Or
tell me what that is.
Maybe some of the other measures you took.
Two things that I did that were extreme. First was like beauty maintenance routine and stuff with, like, you know, being a girl, there's a lot of stuff. And I know that there are guys out there who also put a lot of time and effort and money into grooming, but it's just different with girls because of the pink tax. We are targeted products and things that are so much more expensive to stay beautiful and to look, you know, whatever. And for me, a lot of that was, you know, maintaining my appearance. So getting haircuts, getting my nails done, and doing my eyebrows, which for many years I would go like every 2 weeks and spend $8 to $12 to get my eyebrows waxed, you know, and it hurts. I'm not gonna lie, you get used to it after a while, but it's just it's the name of the game. You want to be pretty on your first date, you want to look nice, you got to put the money down to you know, keep up with your beauty routine. And so when I got really serious about my budget, I was like, okay, this is what I have, this is what I'm going to spend money on, this is what I don't have, this is what I can't put money towards. And so I remember one time I was with my family and my sisters, because I'm one of five sisters. There's nine of us total, but four are brothers and the other four are sisters. So one of five sisters, and my sisters were... they were just dogging me, like making fun of me, you know, roasting me, which is their way of showing tough love. I'll say that, but still, it still hurts sometimes. They were just like dogging me, like, oh, you look like Frida Kahlo, because my eyebrows were,
That is harsh. That's harsh.
Come on. It doesn't look that bad.
Nobody, come on.
They had not been done for a couple months. I'm not going to lie. So I was like, well, you know, I was trying to tweeze them on my own, but I don't really know how to do it. I don't want to mess them up and whatever. And they're like, just go spend the money. And I'm like, well, I can't because I promised myself I was not going to use my credit cards again until I paid them off. And I don't have the $12 in my budget because every dollar had a job and it was not my eyebrows this month. So, you know, I just kind of went home that night and I'm thinking about them making fun of me. And I'm like, all right, let me see if I can just figure out a way to do my own eyebrows. It can't be that hard. So I went on YouTube and I started looking up how to do your own eyebrows. And a video came up about threading your eyebrows, which I had done one time, or I had it done one time for my sweet 16 party. My sister took me to a place in Manhattan where they threaded my eyebrows. It was like a very traditional Indian eyebrow threading place. So I always thought, like, that's something that if that's not in your culture, you don't know how to do it, you're gonna like rip your eyebrows off your face. So don't even try to do that, you know. But there was this tutorial on YouTube, and it made it seem pretty simple. You didn't have to like use your mouth with the thread, which is what often the traditional way to do it looks like. So you could just like make one thread loop and cross it over like in the form of an X. And so I started practicing it until I was like, oh, okay, I learned how to like control which hairs I will pluck with the thread. And so then I did my own eyebrows. And funnily enough, now I do my sister's eyebrows, even though they were making fun of me. I do my mom's eyebrows. I do my sister-in-law. A lot of my girlfriends be like, can you do my eyebrows between visits? Like, I just need a touch-up. And my nieces will have me do their eyebrows. So it's funny because I was really committed to my frugal, like my tight budget, and so much so that I wasn't willing to put a $12 eyebrow charge on my credit card because I promised myself I wasn't going to use it.
Yeah, no, I love that. You mentioned like that's a resolve, right? Yes. To say no to things and to find a solution outside of it, to get a little creative. I think, Matt, that reminds me of when you did your wife's hair at some point. What was it called?
Balayage.
Balayage,
it's just
yeah.
The layering.
Matt trained himself. He learned. He watched a bunch of YouTube videos.
Not unlike Anneli. I watched a few YouTube videos.
Because it's like a really expensive way to get your hair done.
Hundreds
right?
of dollars.
Yes.
Well, speaking of, dude, maybe I should start my own salon because I've cut your hair. You know, I cut
maybe
your hair.
Maybe you and Anneli should partner together and start your own thing, right?
This is a personal business plan finance. In the making right here, yeah. For real.
Exactly.
For real.
Oh, y'all. I'll just come in and get some work done, but I won't be a part of it.
You can hang out.
Yeah. No, but I love that. I think that says so much, and it's so important to be willing to say no to things, even if it's in an ideal world. Hey, at some point I'll get there and I'll be able to go splurge on that.
That's
but
right.
Not until I've actually got the cash in hand to be able to do it.
That's right.
I've got another question for you, Nelly. Like Matt and I talked on the show before. There's a lot of actually data about how second generation immigrants tend to succeed more than first generation immigrants, and more than Americans who are fourth, fifth generation. Mm-hmm. They tend to realize the American dream more than any other cohort.
Yep.
Do you have any insight as a second generation immigrant as to what the secret sauce is there? Like what's involved, and why is it that second generation immigrants really live the American dream more than the rest of us?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that this is anecdotal, obviously, because I don't have any studies to source, but I will say there is this emotional connection, this psychological, deeply seated mentality of a combination of the gratitude that you have for the efforts that your parents have put in to immigrate to a whole new country. They left their entire life behind. Everyone they knew and loved, they left it in their native country to come here with the sole purpose of giving you, their child, a better opportunity than the one that they had. And they worked unforgiving immigrant jobs and worked unforgiving hours. And when I say the word sacrifice is so underrated in immigrant mm-hmm. community, I mean, truly, it is the ultimate sacrifice to leave your comfort, your loved ones, everything you know, your way of life for your children to have better opportunities. It makes me want to cry right now as I talk about it, because mm-hmm. I know that my mom and dad made that ultimate sacrifice for me and my siblings. And so when I think about that, there's something psychological happening there that is, it's so powerful that you feel you have to, you do not have a choice but to make their sacrifice worthwhile. Mm-hmm. And that means that you have to succeed. You have to find a way to succeed, whether it's through the very traditional pathway of going to college and getting, you know, your job and having a successful career path, the more traditional way, or whether it's an alternative to the four-year college pathway and, you know, join the military or becoming an entrepreneur or or, you know, whatever that pathway looks like. It doesn't have to be that cookie cutter perfect for your college degree type of pathway. But whatever it is that you do, you're doing it with a certain level of grit and resilience that is near to impossible to plant into someone if they don't naturally have it. And I think a lot of children of immigrants naturally have it because they've witnessed that ultimate sacrifice that their parents have made, and they're just trying their hardest to, you know, give their parents that the ability to say, to feel that sense of gratitude and pride for their children.
Mm-hmm. That's so true. And that being said, so you are a second gen immigrant and you have that resolve. A lot of folks, they don't have that either gumption or that grit to figure things out on their own.
Right. We did a whole episode about grit, by the way, and how that was like the number one ingredient in getting better with money, and how you kind of have to like figure out how to get it.
You know, they could have like co-hosted that episode, I'm sure. But a big part of getting ahead with your finances is knowing the right stuff. Yep. And fact is, there are a lot of folks who don't have that drive to figure it out. And sometimes it does need to be presented in a more formal manner. And we're actually going to talk more about financial literacy and some of the things that Yanely is doing to make this more accessible across our country. We'll get to that right after this. Joel, so we were just recounting our trip to Scotland. This is the trip that we took this time last year, actually, with some of our friends over the weekend. And one of the highlights from Edinburgh was stumbling upon the absolute best meat pie shop. Mm-hmm. They were fresh out of the oven. They had that perfectly flaky crust. But guess what? That serendipitous experience would never have happened if we'd stayed at a boring hotel. We had found the perfect flat in the coolest part of town, thanks to Airbnb.
Ah, man, I'm still dreaming about those meat pies. You're making you're making me drool. And while turning to Airbnb might be a no-brainer when you're looking to spend some money on travel, it might not be the first thing you think of when you're looking to make some money. Why let it sit empty, your house, when it could be earning extra income, though? It's the financially smart thing to do. Hosting can easily fit into your lifestyle and is a great way to earn some extra dough.
Yeah, that's right. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. You probably think it's too soon to join AARP, right? Well, let's take a minute to talk about it. Where do you see yourself in 15 years? More specifically, your career, your health, your social life? What are you doing now to help you to get there? Well, there are tons of ways for you to start preparing today for your future with AARP.
What about that dream job you've dreamt about? Sign up for AARP reskilling courses to help make it a reality. How about that active lifestyle you've only spoken about from the couch? AARP has health tips and wellness tools to keep you moving for years to come. But none of these experiences are without making friends along the way. Connect with your community through AARP volunteer events.
So, it's safe to say, it's never too soon to join AARP. They're here to help your money, your health, and happiness live as long as you do. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/wisefriend.
Did you know that money issues are a leading cause of divorce? Monarch, the top-rated personal finance app, also has built-in collaboration features so that you can invite your partner at no extra cost. Together, you can see all your finances, you can collaborate on your budget, and you can get insights into your cash flow and recurring transactions. Emily and I, we've been using Monarch together. It's been a great way to get on the same page with money together. We're able to log in and see our real-time financial stats whenever we want, including a current net worth number, which is a great way to track overall progress.
That's a ton of fun too, yeah. Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app, and it gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. You can create custom budgets, track progress towards financial goals, and collaborate with your partner, like Joel just mentioned. And now you can get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/howtomoney. Unlike other personal finance apps out there, Monarch's simple, intuitive design makes it so easy to set up and to get budgeting. And it's really customizable as well. I'm a big fan of being able to set up automatic rules for different transactions.
After trying out Monarch myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. And right now, listeners of this show will get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/howtomoney. That's monarchmoney.com/howtomoney. For your extended 30-day free trial, go to monarchmoney.com/howtomoney for an extended 30-day free trial. All right, we're back. We're still talking how to get to financial freedom with Yanely Espinal. Her story, just incredible. And so we're so glad to have her here. And Yanely, it's not just about like how far she's come. It's about what she's doing to help others succeed as well. And, you know, I love your mission. I love what you do, what you're doing with so many hours of your work weeks to make sure that other kids, like, we're talking hundreds of thousands, if not millions of kids around the country to succeed in the future. Not just your 10, you know, nieces and nephews. Like, we're your impact is being heard around the nation.
That's right.
And so let's talk about your work with Next Gen Personal Finance and trying to bring financial literacy to the masses, mainly high schoolers. Like, why is that such a passion of yours?
Yeah, I mean, it's such a passion of mine because, as I mentioned a little earlier, I know that if I had had a formal academic course on money management, I would have, you know, I would have had a completely different mindset. And I think it would have really prevented me from making so many of the mindless, reckless mistakes that I made with money in college. And I feel like everyone deserves a fair shot in order to, you know, really be able to thrive financially or even to just get the basics, right? When I was in my master's program for education, I remember learning about the original intent behind creating a public school system in America. And it was called the Great Equalizer. It was to give everyone, no matter what your zip code, your family background, your ethnic origin, no matter where you come from, that when you step into this public school building, you all have an equal opportunity for success. You get an equal education. You understand everything equally so that when you exit, you know, everyone then kind of you're on equal footing, right, to then move forward. Now, obviously, that's like this idealistic of a utopia world where, yes, we're all equal when we leave school. What happens at home is of greater impact on your life than what's happening at school. But at the very least, if you're intending to prepare students so that they can get a job one day and have some type of income so they can, you know, have security for their family, then there should be a class teaching you what the best practices are around what to do when that money comes, when that first paycheck hits. So it's so odd to me, after being a student for decades in our public school system, going off to a very prestigious college, getting a master's degree, coming back to New York City, becoming a teacher in that very public school system that I attended as a child, as a student, now being on the other side in front of the classroom, seeing that the curriculum still didn't include any financial literacy. It just felt like, okay, I could continue to impact my 30 to 40 kids every year. I could even create content on YouTube and affect, you know, a couple million people who subscribe to my channel if I grow really big. But my impact will still be limited versus if I am able to change the laws and make sure that every single teenager before they turn 18 and graduate high school is required to take a full semester, 18-week course diving into money management and personal finance, then no matter what future generation, your children, your children's children, children's children's children are going to be able to get this because of my efforts. And that's the kind of impact I was looking to get done in my work, not just this surface level impact through being a social media creator or being a teacher. Like, I've always been the type of person who prioritizes being of service to others. And I get that from my mom. She's just so giving and always trying to be of service. But I wanted the service to really be the highest impact type of service possible.
So what's interesting is, like, there are even some, like, pretty great folks in the personal finance space who actually question the necessity of some of these different classes. And so I kind of get it, because you even just said yourself, what happens at home, it is even more formational in the minds and in the lives of children. But, like, what would you say to someone out there who is questioning the effectiveness of a single personal finance class in high school?
We've seen more and more of it, and it's really disappointing to see people in the personal finance space who know the value of the education say, oh, well, we don't need it in high school. We don't. Yeah. When it's a subject that touches every single one of our lives, every day of our lives, in perpetuity.
Yeah. I guess what I'm asking, what's your argument against, well, they should just learn it on their own, right, whether it's from their parents or maybe they should just learn it from a book or from a podcast.
Right. Okay. Well, actually, recently I was on TikTok and I saw a Ramit Sethi video. Ramit Sethi, if you don't already know him, I'm sure you know him. His book's awesome. I Will Teach You to Be Rich. His show on Netflix, How to Get Rich. Amazing. Now, I reached out to him and I said, hey, this is like an Instagram DM. I said, hey, I've committed to changing your mind about financial education, and I'm so serious. I am going to show you the latest research and the movement for 21st century relevant financial education. I love your work, and I've always plugged you. You can see that from how many times I've tagged you. But man, this is the number one hot take where you are wrong, and I want to help you get on the right side of the fight. he responded to me and said, I'm open to reading the research. And so I sent him the research. He said, thank you, reading these. So he, you know, it's funny because Ramit posted this video where he talked about, you know, why he doesn't support financial education. And it kind of went viral very quickly, obviously, because he's so well known. But he said, you know, who's going to teach it? If the banks are going to create the curriculum. And we can't even agree on basic fundamental truths in this country. How are we going to agree on personal finance? And then he said, kids don't care about learning about money. So I want to address those points. First of all.
I think he was wrong on all accounts, by the way.
I told him. I said, you're wrong. I'm going to get you on the wrong side.
Every single reason that he gave, I was like, dude, you're way
wrong,
off.
Wrong, dude. Right. And love Ramit. But I told him, I was like, I got to bring you over to our side. You got to be on the right side of the fight. So, all right, let's address them each. One, who's going to teach it? First of all, he said overburdened high school teachers are going to teach it. I can tell you right now through my work at NGPF, it is a free nonprofit organization. So free curriculum, free teacher training. There's over 70,000, close to 80,000 teachers across the country who are accessing the free materials. So this is not curriculum that's created by a bank the way he mentions, where it's like pushing the bank branding on or logo on materials. This is all free, not for profit. It is all literally like 21st century up-to-date online materials, and we have over 80,000 teachers, or close to 80,000 teachers, who've created an account so that they can access the materials for free. What will they take away? What will students take away? There are national personal finance standards for financial literacy education created by Jumpstart, as well as the Council for Economic Education. States can either choose to adopt those standards and teach those topics, or they could create their own state-specific standards for financial literacy education and use their own state-specific standards. That's up to the state, because in education, it's very much local control in our country. This is not a federal issue that the president can just wave a magic wand and say everyone is required to now learn personal finance in high school. It's a state by state local issue. So every state has to dictate what it looks like and how that happens. How are they going to get trained? We offer free teacher training at NGPF. Again, not for profit. So it's not, we're not pushing anything. There's absolutely no agenda. The co-founders created an endowment fund. One of our co-founders, Tim Renzetta, created an endowment fund after having a lot of success as an entrepreneur. He decided this is going to be the thing that he wants to champion. This is where he wants to make change and leave a legacy. And so he created an endowment fund with tens of millions of dollars so that we would never run out of money and be able to continue to provide teachers with free, high quality training and free curriculum materials, as well as advocacy resources. And this is how I'm able to do my job. And this is how so many teachers are able to teach with confidence topics like investing, topics like budgeting, like banking, like, you know, the things that are developing that they never knew about, like buy now, pay later, or cryptocurrency. We're at the front lines, like teaching these teachers the cutting edge information so that they're ready to teach it and pass it on to their students. So no banks and all that kind of stuff. The thing he said about disagreeing on basic fundamental truths in this country is actually not a lie. That's true. There's a lot of divisiveness, and depending, you know, money is political, and there are a lot of people that disagree with, you know, issues in personal finance. The reason why that doesn't really affect this, though, is because I've gone from Florida, where we passed SB 1054 in 2021. The law was successfully passed in Florida, later passed in Georgia, then went up to Michigan, was passed in Michigan, and also passed in Connecticut.
Yeah, Connecticut recently, yeah.
Yeah, so since my work in Florida, it's gone Iowa, Georgia, Michigan, Kansas, New Hampshire, West Virginia, Indiana, Minnesota, and the most recent being in May of 2023, Connecticut, with Louisiana following shortly after in, I want to say, early June 2023. So what we're looking at is this momentum and this wave of, regardless if that state is considered a red state or a blue state, or who the sponsors who championed it are, or if the governor is a Democratic governor or a Republican governor. When we look at Florida and Michigan, two states with governors that couldn't be more opposite, both of those states signed the exact same financial literacy legislation. Yeah. So when you say, oh, we can't agree, we can agree that personal finance is a fundamental skill set that every student needs and deserves.
And it's true that money has political elements, but it's also true that a ton of personal finance can and should be and should remain apolitical.
Absolutely. And when unbiased. 100%
right,
agree.
And when it comes to the education that's taking place in high schools, this reminds me of one of our earliest interviews. We talked with this guy, Dan LaSalle. He was a vice president.
I love Dan. I'm actually the president of his board for Niche Clinic.
Yes. I mean, Dan is one of our favorite guests we've ever had, because he took this outside of the box approach to teaching kids and actually finding ways to attach work to income and then putting money in these kids' hands so that they could actually not just learn the principles, but then put them into action. And so
it's practical.
I feel like people like you and Dan are on the front lines of this fight, and we support you all the way. And anybody who says that personal finance education in school is a waste of time doesn't know what they're talking
not
about.
Not only do they not know what they're talking about, but they haven't been inside of a school recently. I can tell you that because I go into these schools consistently and frequently for my work, and the students light up. When I hear people say kids don't care about learning personal finance until it's relevant to them, I'm like, do you know what it's like to be 16 years old and get your driver's license and actually be looking for a car loan and comparing car insurance rates? Do you know what it's like to be 17 and want to open your first custodial Roth IRA because you just got your first job and you're excited and you want to learn about this and not have any adult in your life or class in school teaching you about these things?
It's practical and life-changing.
And it's applicable immediately when you are a junior or senior in high school. So if you're about to fill out your FAFSA form and you're learning it and then you go do it right away, how can something be more applicable and more immediately beneficial than that? So I just think when people talk about these things, it's usually the people who are the furthest away from the actual classrooms who are the least qualified to talk about this that are the loudest.
Yeah, no, you're
so true.
Spot on. And there's a whole lot of other things that we forget that we learned in high school. And this is one of those things that
You're going to remember.
You're going to remember a bunch. Absolutely. And even if you don't put it in action right away, you're going to be like, years later, you're gonna be like, wait a second, I heard a little compound. Oh, yeah, okay, that's that
thing. Let me go look that up. Yes, that's right.
Yeah, you're going to hear one other thing that's going to trigger something.
And there's a big difference between learning these things at third and fourth grade versus like what you're saying in high school when it's immediately applicable.
100%.
And that's what we're talking about here.
Yeah.
I don't know of any teenager who's entering adulthood who isn't concerned at all about money. It's something that they want more of. And so teaching them how to handle it properly, needs to happen. Yanelli, we are so glad that this is a movement that you're leading.
Got 30 more states to go.
Yes, we're so close.
Your book, Mind Your Money, that's a part of this as well for anybody who just wants to learn more and who isn't getting this kind of information at their school. Where can folks learn more about you and find your book?
Yeah, so if you want to follow along with me on social media, it's at Miss Be Helpful. That's anywhere, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, Miss Be Helpful, M-I-S-S-B-E Helpful. And then for all things related to my book, a chapter list, details about it, buying it, mindyourmoneybook.com.
Awesome. Yanelli, thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. This is great.
All right, Matt, you got to love Yanelli SNL.
So good. Just such a good conversation.
What an interesting story. But just someone who puts their money where their mouth is. Like she is living the life and putting into action all the things she believes on a big scale. Mm-hmm. So love what she's up to. What was your big takeaway from this conversation?
She shared a lot about her own personal story, right? And what I loved was when she was talking about specifically how to get family or friends on board. And she was essentially, she said, like, don't tell them about it necessarily, but show them. Mm-hmm. And she was talking about how you kind of start with the heart. You share a story with them. Essentially, what I was gathering from that was that what it's important to do is to be vulnerable. And I think when you are able to do that, you're able to kind of maybe tear down any defenses that there might be with whoever it is that you're trying to talk about money with. So that's my quick takeaway. Be vulnerable if you're trying to talk to others about personal finances.
Yeah.
But
and
how about you?
She also said, find new friends. Don't ditch your old ones, but find some new ones if you need some other like advice and encouragement.
Yeah.
I think that's great.
The silver lining to social media, which there's not a whole lot of bright sides to social media, that totally is one.
And you don't want to cancel people in your life, whether they have different political views, different money views, whatever it is, for any reason. But yeah, you also might need to find people who are supportive of you in this new endeavor if you're trying to get your money together too. Mm-hmm. One of the things she said at one point, she said every dollar had a job when she was talking about her budget. And she was talking about the resolve to ensure that like she didn't put any purchases on that credit card while she was paying it off. And I think that mental fortitude is a
huge
part of actually being able to get the job done and getting straight with your money, digging yourself out of the hole so you can start to kind of build the mountain to move forward. And so I love that she had that like that fortitude to say not even a $12 charge goes on this credit card. I'm gonna do without. And I think that's it for people who are in a hole right now. We're not all a deprivation mentality. That's not our jam. But for some people at certain places in their personal finance journey, deprivation is necessary, right? In order to, for a time, be able to juice your ability to make progress. Mm-hmm. That's what Yanelli did. And now, guess what? If she wants to, she can go get that massage every single week if she wants, which is great because she's made so much progress. So I think it's just important for people to hear. It's like, it doesn't have to be all deprivation all the time, but sometimes for a period, it's going to take a little more of that intentional effort and a little bit of saying no to yourself, the things that you want.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And DIYing it, figuring out a way to get around it. Totally. Be creative.
There are still ways that you can do it. Yeah, it's not just about the dollars and cents and the money that she was able to save, but it's also just a mindset thing and how she was able to prove to herself, not only to herself, but also to her family that like, no, I'm not playing.
I'm
like,
serious.
This is something that I'm going to get after. And it takes sometimes a principled stand like that in order to move the needle. But Joel, let's talk about the beer you and I enjoyed during this episode. This was a Codebreaker, a West Coast IPA by Trademark Brewing. What were your thoughts on this one, buddy?
Never had anything by this brewery before.
Yeah.
I thought it was really good.
Yeah.
It's, West Coast IPAs are not typically my fave, but I really like this one. It was
I'm with you. Maybe
somewhat dank. It was, but it wasn't as bitter. It wasn't
a little more juicy, perhaps.
Yeah.
So
it was a good middle of the road West Coast, not too hard in that direction.
Yeah. So we've been drinking a lot of East Coast New England hazies. And one of the great things about West Coast IPAs, you don't have to worry about the sediment. You know?
Yeah, that's true.
You and I, actually, this wasn't even on the show. You and Emily, the family came over and we're enjoying a beer. And it had a decent amount of sediment. And so, I was kind of swirling the can up. So that way we both, because a lot of times it's that hop bite that you find in that sediment. It's like hop bits.
It's
I don't know.
It's like eating a little bit of a pepper, like a hot pepper, you know? And you just get that concentrated hop.
I was swirling it, making sure that you and I both have this equal amounts of sediment because that's flavor. But you ain't got to worry about that when it comes to a West Coast IPA. Yep. You pour it perfectly clear, delicious, refreshing. This one specifically had some stone fruit, I see, which I feel like definitely stood out as we were enjoying it. But yeah, glad you and I got to enjoy a Trademark beer. But Joel, that's going to be it for this episode. We'll make sure to link to some of the different resources we talked about, and specifically where you can learn more about Yanelli, find her book.
And if you're a teacher, you can link we'll link to some of those next gen personal finance resources. They are at the forefront of encouraging and promoting financial literacy in schools. And you might be able to partner with Yanelli to bring financial education to your state. If you're a teacher, you can advocate for that, which is cool.
Yeah, so there is real momentum behind what it is that they're doing. But buddy, that's going to be it for this episode. Until next time.
Best friends out.
Best friends out.
Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're really choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers.
Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies.
Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
An October morning in a quiet suburb in a town in Scotland, a man is walking his dog when suddenly shots are fired from a car. The man falls to the ground and the car speeds off. An ordinary residential area, but extraordinary things happen in ordinary places.
The instinct right away was it was a political thing.
We're talking about Russian-trained, high-ranking officer in the Secret Service.
An Assassin Comes to Town, a six-part podcast. Available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
When it comes to your finances, go for the credit card that's always there for you. With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night.
Yep, that means no more waiting for, quote, normal business hours just to get a hold of someone. We're talking real service from real people whenever you need it. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.